This is an example of speech.
All our history of royalty.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle, blowhard, evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment sections in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Albro. You can contact me on Twitter at @bloatednemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at @green_weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have weak thoughts about student riots in Nicaragua and Turkish currency, a sobering segment about the callous American immigration policies, and closing thoughts about wages, Papua New Guinea's social media, and the mustache rides again. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now, for some weak thoughts.
Those who benefit never ask why, just sit back with a choice of cocoa beans. They don't wonder what profit really means. Acknowledge innocence from the ivory tower. Waste your life in a struggle for power. All men thus reduced to fleas. So fucking just do whatever you please.
All right. Just tell me what to think. Live from my basement, avoiding the horrible heat outside because our AC is broken. You're locked in a box with no airflow because they're doing construction down the block.
Well, no, we have the central air on, but it's the jackhammering might get loud at times, so this recording. We'll have some errors.
Hopefully we can avoid that. Yep, this is the Tell Me What to Think podcast. Please find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Google Play, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called, Stitcher. We got contacted this week on our tmwttpod@gmail.com email of the podcast, email address of the podcast. And there's something called Listen Notes, which is a way to search for podcasts, and apparently we are on that. They let us know we're on that. I guess it's just for searching, so that makes sense. It just searches other platforms, I guess. So that's cool.
One thing that's weird to me is that have we ever plugged that email address specifically in, like, just a text format?
In the email, this guy said he found it in our RSS feed. I probably included it in a description once or twice.
Okay.
A text description. I don't think I do it every week. Maybe I should, apparently, though, if someone noticed it. Twitter is a thing, and we are on it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this Listen Notes is a really great search engine.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot. Maybe it's because it's so focused, but yeah, it works really well.
And I personally have found I don't like searching on the platforms for podcasts. It doesn't seem to work well.
Well, you'd probably never find ours on Google Play. Even under its own name.
Yeah. Yes. Even though we're on it. Yeah. Head to this other one for ours and other great podcasts. Anyway, Twitter, I'm Bloated Nemesis. Charles is green_weird, WYRD. Twitter is a great place to get into fights with people, so we encourage everyone to get on there, let out some anger, or get angry and then let it out on there.
Scream into the void.
Yeah. Oh, man. The void screams back, of course, on Twitter. What's going on in the world, Charles?
Well, the Turkish lira is sinking against the dollar and its other major trading partners.
Okay.
And Nicaragua is currently experiencing, shall we say, some civil unrest and other and associated political violence.
Let's set up Turkey first, because I seem to remember you bringing this up a couple months ago. And so has it been kind of consistently bad over the past few months?
Yeah, it's been getting... Over the past, well, I guess 2 years, the Turkish lira has been taking a slide, but now it's, according to the chart that I'm just looking at, it has lost 20% of its value against the dollar and the euro in the last, 6 months?
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that's a huge loss. I think we were talking about the Iranian currency a few months ago, and I thought something like their buying power had dropped like 15, and we were like, "Wow, that's terrible."
Yeah, that's
and so 20% and
it's apparently 50% or 60% against the dollar over the past 2 years.
So, are they? Is there any? Well, I don't know, changes that are noteworthy that either caused it, or maybe even more interesting or relevant would be reactions to that on behalf of their government?
Well, their government is basically Erdogan at this point.
Sure.
Taken his line and no other line shall be. He recently did not something interesting, but something other populist dictators have done, and asked his citizens, who apparently had U.S. dollar bills and euros stuffed in their mattress, to convert them to Turkish lira to help buttress their falling currency.
Yeah, did anyone fall for that?
In response, the currency fell harder. Because investors don't like hearing that.
Yeah,
because
it sounds desperate.
Mm-hmm. It's like, hey man, can I get that five in your piggy bank? Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So, yeah, Turkey's experiencing some economic problems as a It's an outgrowth of their political and foreign policy, though, unfortunately. He's taken a hard anti-Western stance and tried to sidle up to Russia, but Russia's growing somewhat isolationist. It's kind of taking more of a hands-off approach in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And so Erdogan is just left holding the bag over an economy that no longer has the patrons that it once enjoyed.
I mean, it seems like such a shitty exchange when talking about economics, America for Russia.
Yeah, you won't get nearly the economic support because they just don't have the money to spread around or access to our resources, our educational institutions. Yeah. There's problems.
Hold on. It's okay. It just strikes me that Russia is not that much bigger of an. I'm trying to find numbers right now. That much bigger of an economy than Turkey would be.
Turkey over the last 20 years or 30 years rather became kind of a manufacturing hub, especially for Europe. Let me bring up this here.
Yeah, but I mean, is Russia going to be that noteworthy of a buyer for those manufacturing goods? I mean, I guess there's a lot of people there, but I don't know. It's not like China or sixth biggest country in the world in terms of population. I mean,
wait, Turkey?
No, I'm talking about Russia as like.
Okay.
And they don't even have a ton of per capita income to buy, like, unnecessary manufacturing goods like Americans would. It just seems short-sighted. I mean, is it an ideological thing that's getting in the way of economics, or...?
Sort of. As with Turkey, of course, as I mentioned before, politics is increasingly personal in the person of Erdogan, and that prosecution in the Southern District of New York... of the Turkish gold traders seems to have taken that kind of personally. And yeah,
it's okay. Here, I got some numbers here. The annual GDP is a little bit more in Russia. It's 1.2 trillion, it looks like, and Turkey is 800 billion, or I might be off by a factor. Not really important. But what's more interesting to me is this GDP per capita. Turkey is more than Russia. It's 10,800 to 8,900.
That's kind of a significant difference.
And so it's like they're the manufacturing hub, but they're selling to a country that makes less per person than them?
Well, and the rest of the world. Like, Turkey, because of their historic involvement in the non-aligned movement, has access to markets in, like, India, Africa, South America.
But you're saying in the not-too-distant past, they also had Western markets.
Right, because before Erdogan kind of, just gave the European Union a stiff middle finger, they enjoyed simply better relations with Europe. I mean, accession, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce that, was on the table, but now I don't think Turkey wants, or Erdogan, again, specifically, wants Turkey to join the European Union.
Sure. This strikes me, I guess we could maybe finish on this, it's kind of a noteworthy example of sometimes you hear from different political alignments in the West or in America how, dictatorships and autocratic governments are bad, but, they can get things done fast. You know, they can, if they want to do something, they can get it done. It's kind of like this, like, almost like jealousy of people in a democracy, like, oh man, they can, like the example brought up is like Chinese infrastructure and climate change things.
Yeah, they're not getting bogged down with a heavy hand.
Yeah, they're not getting bogged down in, democratic spats. But this seems like a noteworthy example of when you isolate that power into one personality or a few personalities, how it can just—it's just like normal one-on-one people interactions, like a group of friends or a class or a school. It's like high school drama almost, and how it's just ground. Their economy is grinding to a halt because it's all running through one guy who's bitter or something.
Right, and he's short-sighted and again human, so he's going to make mistakes. But
yeah.
So his mistakes are compounded and spread across the entire country.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, yes, and so, like, yes, good things can be sort of amplified faster, but so can the bad things, and it kind of balances out, or even actually probably balances in a negative way compared to a democracy.
A democracy, yeah. Right, because people can be like, that's a bad idea, let's try it this way, and other democratic institutions like that.
It's just nowadays you hear a lot of people bemoaning the decline of democracy, Western republics, and all that. And there's not, like, beyond just sort of like an intuitive, implicit, intrinsic defense of it, there's not like a lot of like practical defenses of it. And I think this is a noteworthy example. Of one,
right? Because this is I could probably model this mathematically.
Yeah, and it's not just a loss of. We're not really talking about. Not saying there isn't. You couldn't, but we're not talking about the like civil rights of Turkish people. We're talking about their economic prosperity,
right? Which notionally Erdogan was a custodian of.
Yeah,
I mean he enjoyed the benefits of the liberalization and opening up the market. And other regulations, but now he's enjoying the souring of that fruit. I feel like this is a perfect way to transition to our topic of Europe and the democratic deficit phrase that I've been hearing lately.
What is that?
Well, thing about the European Union is that there is a severe democratic deficit, especially at the higher ranks, because the commission is purely appointed. Like,
yeah, how is that appointed?
By heads of state.
Okay, yeah. It's almost like the NCAA is appointed by heads of universities.
Huh, which that makes a lot more sense.
Which is a noteworthy, large, corrupt organization.
That explains why they won't let their students collect any money for their efforts.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's like, we're only taking billions. No, anyways, that's another. But so this commission, which is notionally the executive authority of the European Union, mm-hmm. is, you know, of course, overseen by their president, Donald Tusk, currently. But it is really unaccountable. And that's really where this deficit stems from. The feeling that, you know, policy doesn't have... Individuals don't have any bearing on policy. Which kind of you can see a little bit in the United States, unfortunately. I mean, they're... Okay, so these career bureaucrats, not to bemoan every single one of them, because of course there are good people, but some of them can be corrupted. And if, as we were pointing out in the earlier part, if there's only a few people that make decisions and even one of them is horribly corrupt or even just biased, it could lead to pretty severe ramifications where people feel like, hey, the current problem is Italy, the Five Star Group and maybe the North League, but they're trying to make a coalition government and they offered what they call a Eurosceptic candidate for finance minister. And the the political establishment had to shut that down, like, quash that like a bug. Because Italy being, like, what, the third largest economy in Europe, if it pulled out of the euro, it would be even more devastating for the union.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the Italians are kind of fed up with the European Union and expressed it, and are trying to express it, and... Due to this democratic deficit, their wishes are not being ceded to.
But it's kind of like they're in, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like the EU is in sort of a middle ground where if they pushed for more direct democratic control of the EU amongst, from the people, that would be seen as almost like a power grab taking away sovereignty from these countries. And then, so it wouldn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, one of the problems with it is that they don't have enough democracy, but if they pushed for more democracy, it might be viewed as...
Impugning individual national sovereignty?
Yeah.
Well, they already vote for the parliament, so there are elections.
Okay.
Representation.
So why doesn't that parliament just choose these people?
That's a very good question.
Okay.
And that's part of why some people might have an issue.
And okay.
I would say even go for direct elections if you're going to have like just basically a cabinet, because make those people have to worry about their jobs.
Yeah.
Like actually provide services and maybe. At least neutral, if not positive, policy outcomes for most people.
Was this system enacted for, I don't know, like, to kind of guarantee certain... Because, if I'm understanding this right, the way it's set up now, particularly the more powerful countries would always have a say in leadership. But if it was more democratic with this leadership and these ministers, then you could kind of have like a lot of the smaller countries sort of
would have more say.
Yeah, almost like American politics in a way where like here we have like a lot of the rural states kind of have banded together as Republicans. I'm not saying they would necessarily be conservative there, but you know what I'm saying? Like they would, they could kind of overwhelm the manufacturing, urban, more urban, richer countries. So this way they'd always have, just throwing it out there.
I mean, maybe, but Germany and France are still the two largest countries in the Union, so... Poland is a pretty populous country, but I don't think... it's such a melange, it's tough to pare it down into, like...
Yeah, it's true. It's Europe.
It's Europe.
Yeah, no, we're aware of.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, like, utterly simplistic to just, like...
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Well, and then even those, you know... I have a feeling Germany would be more split politically than, and granted it's bigger, albeit, but than, say, maybe Hungary. Like, if the president of Hungary said, we need to vote this way as Hungarians, don't you think he'd get a higher percentage of Hungarians to vote a certain way?
Yes. Well, I mean, sort of. He's kind of suffered some blowback after his most recent election.
Okay. Well, anyway, so...
But yeah, I see what you're saying. Some countries do have stronger national identities than others in the European Union.
Yeah. So is there a move for reform, or is it just a move for kind of Brexit style, well, fine, we're out? I mean, is that...
I mean, it seems like if there's not compromise, some countries are going to be pushed into that direction.
Well, I mean, maybe I didn't quite understand. It seems like Italy was putting forth, like, an almost, like, Trumpian, like, candidate, though.
Well, not necessarily Trumpian, but Eurosceptic, which maybe a little xenophobic, but...
Trumpian's such a loaded term, I shouldn't have done that. Someone, like, the way he nominates cabinet positions to, like, dismantle that agency or ministry or... That's all I meant by it. Like, it seems like... The guy's skeptical of the system, and they put him up as someone to participate in the system.
Well, I mean, there's ranges of skeptical. I mean, some of the Italian politicians in particular in the five-star movement are like, we need to leave the European Union like England is.
Mm-hmm.
So being slightly skeptical of economic policies from the European Central Bank and, you know, the other large countries isn't necessarily the worst problem.
But still willing to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Because, I mean, Italy is still part of Europe. In some ways, the heart of Europe.
Why do you say that?
By virtue of Rome and its continuing influence over Europe and its politics.
I didn't actually even know Rome had such sway still.
Well, I mean, all the roads are still the Roman gauge.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I guess I would have thought, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess that, you know, Rome, yeah. Maybe Rome, Berlin, Paris, kind of a triangle of power.
Yeah, the three capitals. Well, it would have been London up until a couple of years ago.
Now, was Britain never a part of the Euro, or were they?
They were not. They've always kept the pound sterling.
Yeah, they did, okay. Is that made it... I mean, do you think they could have done Brexit if they...
If they adopted the euro? No, it would have been far, far messier.
Yeah. Man, it's just that seed. You know, like, I'm sure when they, you know, however many years ago, what was that, 15, 20 years ago, when they, you know, decided not... When the euro was introduced and they didn't do it, you know, you wonder if... If anyone really thought that that meant that they would leave, but it kind of kept a seed planted, allowing that to happen. So give me, like, I don't know. So, yeah, what the EU seems to not be on a good trajectory for its own sake, at least.
Well, they're being left in the woods by Trump and our America First foreign policy, so the Atlantic support that has kind of allowed them to grow up to this point is kind of being pulled out from under them.
Is there any chance they'll kind of, if shit hits the fan in some way, somewhere, no prediction, but that there might be like a banding together, like a Circle the Wagons type mentality.
It depends of what it is. Like, yeah. Obviously, we saw Greece, the internal economic problem that caused them to circle the wagons around Greece.
Yeah.
But if there was some, well, they had the refugee crisis, which Angela Merkel more or less got them into formation to support their response.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, obviously Viktor Orban and some of the others were less enthusiastic for that approach. But if there was a foreign military threat, yeah, that would be interesting, because Europe really hasn't faced that since, what, the 40s?
Well, I mean, a little bit in the Cold War. I mean, Russian tanks were rolling into, you know, Prague and all that on their doorstep for at least Western Europe.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, well, even so, that was from within. When's the last time someone from outside of Europe invaded Europe? That would be like, what, the Ottomans or something?
Maybe. Yeah, probably the Ottomans and the Balkans, right?
Yeah.
Attacking from Turkey. Yeah. And Erdogan wants to become the new Ottoman Empire, so...
Well, you know, he has to... I don't think he has enough time left in him to, you know, expand too far.
No.
I mean, because he's like dealing with crumbs there, no offense to the Kurds, but, like... I'm slightly pushing our borders into, what, Syria?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, if you're trying to be an empire, you have to...
Actually do some... Yeah, it's messy.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah.
Well, he's maybe not an empire, but he's trying to be neo-Ottoman. Kind of like a Turkey-first policy.
Sure. Okay. Well, I'm sure all the neighbors of Turkey are looking forward to how that plays out. So let's talk about Nicaragua then.
Another country with a democratic deficit, which in the form of their President Ortega, his vice president is his own wife.
Ooh, a little Mugabe, what the Mugabes hoped to be.
Right. It's, yeah, really, really nepotistic and horribly corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to find some numbers on our support to Nicaragua, but I haven't been able to find anything that's available on the internet.
What, in terms of?
Well, military support. Okay. I know I'm pretty sure, despite the name of that bill currently escapes me, but despite of the U.S. laws saying that we can't give money to known human rights violators, they are almost certainly... receiving large amounts of U.S. support.
And so the trouble going on there is against
the administration.
Ortega and administration. Okay. So he's a little more right wing or what?
Yeah, he's if you remember, he was kind of installed. All right, let me make sure I'm getting my history correct.
I don't.
Yeah, he was a Sandinista. That's why we're supporting him.
Oh.
He was part of the 5-member Junta of National Reconstruction that overthrew the communists or left-leaning Morgan Soviet-backed...
But he hasn't been in power since then, has he?
He has been in power. He first was in power from... 1979, when the junta took control as coordinator until 1985, and then he did a 5-year term as president. And now he has been in office since 2007. So, about 25 years all told, or, yeah, 20 years all told.
Jesus Christ. You know, this... He doesn't even look that old. Bring up a picture of him right now. Oh, he married his wife in 79. I wonder if they were, like, killing commies together.
That's probably something people could bond over.
He must have been, I mean... he must have been young when he was running it in the 80s. Well, here's a picture from shaking hands with Jimmy Carter.
Wow.
Sounds about right. I'm not trying to, like, totally rip on Carter. Just the politics of the day and the time and things that were done. Yeah, man, he must have been really... I'm sure he dyes his hair, though, you know.
He was born in 45, so he would have been in his 30s when he took over.
Jeez. I mean, I know it's a small country, but still, that's...
Well, I mean, that's what happens when a large party can sponsor a certain group that isn't necessarily the oldest or most experienced.
Yeah.
And in some ways, that's better, because they'll be more malleable and in longer.
Yeah. So, there are students seizing a university?
Yeah, there's been some political violence in Nicaragua. Some protesters and students seized, let me get the name of the university correct.
I think it looks Engineering.
The Engineering University in Managua.
Yeah.
I saw also an Al Jazeera report that was just talking in vague general terms about the violence, but in the background their role was somewhere between a protest and a riot where people were lobbing using homemade grenade launchers to attack a state radio station, or the office of a state radio station.
Yeah, that looks like that's in this article I'm reading right now. Radio Ya.
Mm-hmm.
Whose offices are located near the university were partially set on... They don't have quite the color in this article as you're describing. Were partially set on fire during the demonstration.
You can say partially set on fire like somebody just poured gasoline over it, but I saw that.
Oh, but there is a...
Not gasoline.
There is a picture here, like, oh man, our engineering friends would love this. Here's a picture of an engineering student fires a homemade mortar towards riot police.
Yes. Yep, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so they got the pictures of it. They just weren't describing in the article. This thing looks awesome, by the way.
Yeah, he was firing with very little recoil. I mean, my M203 in the military had more recoil than that seemed to have.
Oh, it says here scores of people have died in clashes since the protests began in April.
Yep. Dozens of people. I don't think there's been any official statement from our government, except the State Department withdrew the non-essential personnel and said to avoid Nicaragua for crime and civil unrest. I mean, Nicaragua apparently is a main transshipment point for smuggling drugs from south to north into the United States, and that's part of the reason we're there, in part.
Part of the reason what?
And that's part of the reason the United States is so heavily involved.
Hmm. Man, almost all these pictures, they have these mortar things. This is remarkable. I've never seen something like these. Maybe I'm focusing on the wrong thing. But these mortar things are... These handheld mortar rounds are... That's crazy. Like, almost every protester has one in these pictures that I'm looking at. It's remarkable.
Yeah, so you can...
Yeah. So the government's taking iron fist against them, sounds like.
And, yeah, killing, I hear, 76 people, according to the article that I'm reading here.
Reuters calls it a thuggish response to weeks of protests.
Yeah, they're taking the heavy-handed approach because they know there won't be any international repercussions. Even if this did go to the United Nations Security Council, there wouldn't be any formal resolution because, well, Ortega has Trump's backing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a shame. What do we get out of... Is it just... This is where I kind of have these problems with the U.S. involved in Latin American politics. Like, I guess I sort of get it in a almost team sport mentality, like during the Cold War. You know, like, okay, they're the communist team. We're the...
Democratic, in quotations marks.
Yeah, I was going to say just not communist team. capitalism team. There we go, yeah. And
capitalist.
And you know, so they're the bad guys. So anything, you know, I get that, like, in 1982. But it's not like there is this evil, you know, in quotes, evil empire that's pushing this, you know, nefarious ideology in our hemisphere. I mean, so what if they're a little left wing? I mean,
yeah, they try to make Chavez the boogeyman, but he's not nearly so dangerous as like Khrushchev might have been.
Well, I mean, part of it's like, what do we need? Why do we need these dictators as a bulwark against what exactly? Like some socialist light policy? Like if we played more with carrots towards the left wingers there than sticks, I think they would just not be super left wing after a while.
Sure, but our corporations are so exploitative down there. Like that, okay. A lot of that is like resistance to our economic excess and disproportionate like looting of their resources and people.
Okay, so we have to. So I think this is becoming a little clearer. So.
And let's not forget the fact that we're kind of making life miserable, especially for Latin America, encourages their richest and brightest to emigrate north. Which is kind of sick.
You think that's a conscious policy? That's really sick if that's true.
I mean,
it might be the effect, yeah.
A happy effect, at least.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's gross. Yeah, but.
And we don't really have any means to, well, I mean, I guess we could if there were political will for it, but we're not going to intervene.
No, no. But I mean, even just a, you know, quiet, like quiet wink and a nod towards the right-wing dictator is a form of intervention when you're America.
Who's the ambassador?
Oh, I'm sure we don't want to know.
Laura F. Dogu. She was nominated by President Barack Obama. I guess she's still ambassador.
Oh my gosh. Trump kept on an Obama appointee.
Right,
he's just gonna blame it. He's gonna blame it on her.
I mean, maybe, but it's a little weird that that's like one of the few countries that we still have regular ambassador to.
I bet the ones that we do have Obama holdover type of ambassadors are the countries that Trump would call shitholes. Like, doesn't even care. For good or bad, I don't know, but.
Yeah, or, you know, it's just one of those places where it's strangely necessary to maintain continuity of policy. Man, that guy was louder than the jackhammering.
I haven't heard the jackhammering.
It was going on in the background, so I guess we didn't need to worry about it.
I think you oversold this jackhammering.
I thought it was going to be louder.
I'm glad it's not, though. So, anyway, what else is happening? I think that... Do we hit most
of it? That covers most of the news. I mean, other than the major highways buckling and roads buckling here in Wisconsin because of this unseasonably warm weather.
Yeah, well, I mean, within about 40 days, we went from blizzards to 95 degrees and humid.
Yeah, my bank across the street was reading 103, but I assume that's because it's surrounded by concrete.
I think it was getting 100 just a little more south of here, so maybe it got close to that. I mean, yeah, that bank is way out in this, you know, it's in the, there's no shade on that at all the whole day. I think, like, yeah, Iowa was getting to 100, but...
Minneapolis was apparently the hottest city in the country the other day.
Jesus Christ, Minneapolis, man, you got a feel for them.
Yeah, right. There. Where's this heat? What is this?
They just don't...
One day a week or one day a year otherwise.
They don't get spring. They just, they're not allowed to have spring and fall at all. You get blizzards and then muggy, mosquito-y
heat. And bear-filled.
bears wandering in, stealing your children and...
voting Republican.
Yeah. So, speaking of stealing your children, you want to, in the next segment, talk about
Yeah, where are the children?
Where are the children? All right, we'll be back with a little deep dive into a very sad topic. All right, so we were just saying to each other that this might be our most depressing topic, and we've talked about genocide before. So, this past week, there's been kind of a firestorm after about 1,500, quote...
Be careful. Those numbers were lost under the Obama administration.
Well, I wasn't saying that they got lost this past week. But that's kind of been a bit that's been reported that's really ignited... this story.
Mm-hmm.
Broad strokes, the story is families are coming to the border seeking asylum. Stop me when I get to a part that's incorrect.
Okay.
Seeking asylum from primarily Central and South America. They are being apprehended at or near the border.
Well, to be a refugee, you have to, like, announce yourself at the border.
So have all these people been doing that?
Yeah, I think.
Okay, so they find someone, border patrol or some sort of official, announce themselves, say, I'm seeking asylum, and then they are being arrested?
Yeah, and separated from their children.
And this is a practice that has been...
inaugurated by our illustrious Attorney General Jeff Beauregard Sessions.
Okay, and I just had the quote in front of me, but he said, "If you cross the border unlawfully, even a first offense, we're going to prosecute you. If you're smuggling a child, we're going to prosecute you, and that child will be separated from you, probably as required by law." What forceful way of understanding the law, there, Attorney General? Okay, so,
right,
so that's a lie, though, right? Because they're not crossing unlawfully, right?
Yeah, let me read Article 31 of the 1951 UN Convention on Refugees. Article 31, refugees unlawfully in the country of refuge. 1. The contracting states, the states that are party to this convention, shall not impose penalties on account of their illegal entry or presence on refugees who, coming directly from a territory where their life or freedom was threatened in the sense of Article 1, enter or are present in their territory without authorization, provided they present themselves without delay to the authorities and show good cause for their illegal entry or presence.
Okay.
So... the shall not impose penalties mm-hmm. parts is absolutely key. So you can't arrest, you shouldn't be able to arrest them. You absolutely should not be able to separate them from their children, as that is just cruel and mm-hmm. petty.
Yeah.
It's difficult to not be passionate enough about the stories. I think it's disgusting that there were 1,475 children allegedly lost last year under... you know, the Obama administration, but that's going to be magnitudes of order worse under this policy where everyone is being separated.
Okay, so let's just parse out some things here, because I find this issue to be numbing and confusing.
Okay.
So, in the final 3 months of 2017, they could not locate 1,500 children.
Mm-hmm.
About 1,500 undocumented. Are those people that came with families seeking asylum, or is this a separate immigration thing?
They would have been called unaccompanied minors, so they get directed to the Office of Refugees and Resettlement, who manage these kids and put them into various state licensed programs and other subcontractors' programs to, you know, house and care for them notionally.
So these are children who were crossing the border on their own?
Yes, but the thing about... well, a lot of them, like 95 to 98% of them, have family already here in the United States that they're trying to, you know, meet up with. The thing about what Sessions is policy and why it's so disgusting is that they're arresting their parents, and so they're using that as justification to say, oh, these children are now unaccompanied minors, and throwing them into the system, into, as John Kelly put it, foster care or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these kids who are not located in the final 3 months of 2017, who were trying to cross the border...
Mm-hmm.
They because you said earlier that this was an older policy and it'll only be made worse, but this is somewhat recent if it's the last 3 months. So are these people who crossed the border like a long time ago?
Wait, are you?
I'm talking about the 1,500 kids.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out what article you're reading.
The TYT Network, the Young Turks, okay. The one you sent me. It's from. It's called Trump Administration Using Contractors Accused of Abuse to Detain Undocumented Children by Alex Koch. And I believe this is referring to the, you know, you see 1,500 kids like plastered over Twitter the past few weeks. And I really just want to get down, and I'm not trying to even do this for a political, like, who's right, wrong. I as I said, numbed and confused.
We need to know, because I was reading a Mother Jones article that also mentions that number, because it came from... Wagner, who is he? He is the...
Office of Refugee Resettlement?
Yeah, that guy. He's in charge of that. And he said in apparently Senate testimony that they lost track of 1,500 kids, and that's where that quote comes from. I'm just trying to figure out why TYT is so... I just want to make sure that they're accurate in their, you know, timing. But apparently they are, so yeah, in the last 3 months, so during... The first year of the Trump administration, basically.
Okay. So, because but these, so this article in particular is focusing on some companies where these children end up in, or with.
Right.
Like and these companies have been doing things like this for a while.
Right, they're apparently pretty terrible for their, with children. One facility, where is it, a company in Los Fresnos, Texas, a international educational services facility that had received tens of millions of dollars of HHS grants that got closed down after, well, HHS didn't review their funding because the Texas Department of Health and Human Services had found a total of 116 deficiencies that ranged from inappropriate sexual behavior, lapses in foster care home oversight, and problems with administrating medical care and inappropriate or improper punishment of children.
Man, and that's in Texas.
Yeah, and...
Notorious for lack of oversight and regulation.
Mm-hmm. And those 1,500 kids were placed in private homes, which is part of the reason they can't... a lot of them were sent to that 95 to 98% category, and, you know, mm-hmm. were sent to live with family, and so they might have moved for any number of reasons, but you can just, I guess that's just my optimistic hope that that's what happened to those, because I'm almost certain that some of them were inadvertently given to people who shouldn't have received children.
Yeah, I think it's important to kind of not jump to a good or bad conclusion as to where these kids are. But the point is that no one knows.
Mm-hmm.
And they were... So these kids, though, were not forcibly removed from their parents, but there is now a practice by the government to do that, and presumably the kids that they do that to will end up in similar or worse situations. So this is putting a spotlight on why that policy would be and is bad.
Mm-hmm. I saw some Arizona Central, or azcentral.com, was going to put out some photos, and they released some of them already. The children are being housed in, like, metal cages and warehouses.
Yeah, I saw some of that, yeah.
Laying in mats, yeah.
Oof.
Prison should be so good.
Yeah. So, what is the truth to this So, okay, the president was like, there are these terrible laws, and we're just following these laws, and there's people blaming it on, like, well, Obama did it too. So, and then other people are like, well, I don't know about that, but this is new, but maybe we were doing something, you know, maybe Obama was doing something like this, and...
Okay, where I mean, Obama's the deportation commander-in-chief, right? He deported more notionally or undocumented immigrants than anyone else had done before.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I mean, now Trump is trying to meet or break those records. But the fact that, no, this is a very new policy that, again, Jeff Beauregard Sessions has implemented. It has nothing... Obama didn't do anything nearly so terrible.
Specifically with refugees and asylum seekers.
Right.
Yeah.
Which almost all of them are.
So,
I mean, maybe, because this convention is very specific in who it calls a refugee and who it calls an economic migrant. If you're moving for work or study, then you are a migrant. But if you're leaving because you are running from the place that you live and can no longer live there, you are very clearly a refugee. I read go ahead.
Oh, I just want to focus just for a second on how most of the people crossing the border are not, people from Mexico coming here for jobs because they wouldn't just, try and dash across the border or whatever. They wouldn't physically do it that way, on foot for the most part. A lot of the people at the border, I believe, are these... refugees and asylum seekers from
Central and South America.
Places like Nicaragua, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. And Honduras. Like, I read one affidavit that the ACLU posted on Twitter this weekend where a woman was fleeing Honduras with her children and her, basically a large family grouping. Like, her and her sibling had both uprooted, and gone north because the military had tear gassed them out of their house.
Jesus. Yikes.
And so that sounds like a safe situation. Yeah.
This reminds me a little bit of, you remember the Simpsons episode where they talk about they have the bear wanders into the town and then
I don't think so.
Oh, it's one of the greatest. It's like an opener for an episode that has nothing to do with this plot, but it's just the beginning starts off this way. And so a bear wanders into town, and then people get all upset because a bear wandered in town. So they have the, anti-bear patrol, and so they have, helicopters and, they arm some group of law enforcement to the teeth to protect against bears wandering into town, even though that's never happened before this one isolated incident. And Lisa says to Homer, well, what do you need this for? That's not even a problem. And he's like, yeah, but we had a bear. And Lisa's, I'm probably getting the exact banter off. But she's like, well, what if I told you this rock prevents tiger attacks? And he's like, how does it work? And he's like, and Lisa goes, well, you're not getting attacked by a tiger right now, right? And so then, of course, he wants to buy the rock from her because he's stupid. My point is that it seems like the Border Patrol is being created for a problem that doesn't exist as much as it... they're being trained... The reason, they've been talked... the Border Patrol has been like this... Bush back in the day was building it up. No, but I'm saying the Border Patrol... ICE is different because the Border Patrol is protecting the border, right?
Yeah, they're the line... Yeah, they physically protect the border in both our north and south.
But you're, creating this armed force that essentially the main thing that they do and should do is these asylum seekers, which are legal.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're creating this big thing to handle that they're kind of, treating them as if we're... if you ever heard Trump talk about a border patrol, he's not talking about them handling asylum seekers. He is more so the illegal immigration. But that's not mostly what the border patrol encounters. And it seems like we have to now turn them. It's almost like we're creating a solution to something that's not a problem. but the solution is an armed solution, and so now we're having them arrest these asylum seekers. It's all just like this, nothing makes sense in this, and that's why I sound like I'm rambling, but it's because it doesn't make sense. Like, the way they're handling these problems are not the proper solutions, and that's leading to more problems, and they're creating problems.
Yeah, it's dystopian and surreal.
Yeah, and so I just...
It's difficult to parse out because a lot of the language is conflated with people saying, oh, it's all illegal immigrants, and they think that that's everybody who crosses the border.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Americans don't have sympathy anymore, maybe. Huh. Is that... Because they... on the disgusting side of Twitter, I saw a lot of... bless David Simon for doing God's work and calling out every single person that he can find for their idiotic and bigoted opinions.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, he doesn't hold back.
No, I don't agree with him on 100%, but well done, David Simon.
Yeah, because there's this mentality that anyone who comes here from another country, particularly browner countries, are illegal. Whether you're coming under this, what was it, Article 31 you said, or actually illegal, or legal, or educated, education, or probably fucking vacations. There's probably some just person here on a vacation from Mexico that's being yelled at as we speak somewhere down in Texas or something.
I got something to talk about later, but a lot of the immigration violations are exactly that. People just overstay their time here in the United States and don't, get proper green cards. But, like, the meme that most disgusts me that I saw on Twitter was the fact was people kept saying, oh, maybe they shouldn't bring their kids.
Yeah, so what does that mean? Like, so
they leave them there alone in that terrible situation?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously nothing will get better down there. See, why would they... just so infuriating. There's, like, no sympathy or humanity on the part of the response to this.
Yeah.
I mean, we created these problems by funding these terrible governments and death squads down there and propping up every bad idea they've ever had. And then when the people try to flee and try to get some measure of solace and comfort... We're punishing them in direct contravention of international law.
It almost feels consistent, though, in a horrible way.
Consistent hatred.
Well, it's like, yeah, we created those problems down there. It's not so you could come here.
Well, not all of you, right?
Okay, so... One last thing I just want to clarify, just so I'm, understanding.
Mm-hmm.
These companies have been dealing with undocumented children for a while now, though we expect that number is increasing. Under Obama, who did deport a lot of people, were these children whose, parents were deported? But they were citizens, so they could... They wouldn't be undocumented then.
Right.
Like, what were the children that this would have been happening to?
These were the people, the children who were being basically sent alone to meet up with family or just get to the United States.
Oh, okay.
States.
Those, yeah, okay, yeah. There we talk. Okay. Mm-hmm. So under Obama, those would have been all the type of children. So now we're just seeing...
Now all children who come across the border are going to be called unaccompanied minors.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
And, that 1,500 number isn't even... Well, it's just people who are placed into private homes for the most part. Like, the children that they place in the private companies, they still have accountability of notionally, or are able to find out where they are, which means they're being warehoused to in some degree.
Yeah, that's a good point. That two different issues there. There's the people with these companies, and then there's people placed in relatives, mostly relatives' homes?
Yeah, or, you know, state-sanctioned foster homes.
And
preferably that, hopefully that instead of the whatever part. Because apparently I've heard allegations, but I haven't read any specific credible reporting that some of these children were almost basically handed directly to sex traffickers.
Yeah, I saw that referenced either, but I couldn't find where I saw that to double-check on it.
So I'm not going to tell you to think that is the case, but, I mean, with this many children and this the gaping holes in the system, it's almost a statistical certainty that something terrible happened to at least one of these children.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's unfortunately... Well, and if you don't know where they are, then you don't know that it's not that. I'm not saying that means it is that, but, you know, like, that's the problem with losing them, is that it could be terrible. Maybe it's chances for most of them isn't, but it could be. And that's just, like, so irresponsible for, you know, right? The greatest country in the history of the world. Right, pillar of democracy and freedom, and we're arresting children at the border? Children? Ripping? I mean, some of them are babies, too, right?
Yeah, anywhere from toddlers, or, you know, infants, really, to people who are children up to 17 years of age. Yeah, just getting literally ripped away. I've heard, like, heartbreaking accounts of people, like, the children are just ripped away and the parents don't even get a chance to comfort them or, you know, get... It's just absolutely... There's no humanity to it.
Yeah, that's, it's like, I don't think I mentioned this when we were talking about, like, Gina Haspel and the torture. And, one of the things about that story, which this reminds me of a lot, is... like, what it takes for there to be in someone, or what is lacking in someone to do that. Even if there's some dude in a boardroom in D.C. saying that these things need to be done, but the people... You know, because it's kind of like... And I don't want to... I'm not actually even trying to dehumanize the agents who are the actual people physically pulling babies away from mothers and fathers. But, like, does that take something from their soul, so to speak? As much as an atheist believes in a soul. But, you know, they're human. Like, is it that they aren't fully sympathetically human? Or is it that they feel like they have to do that, and this is now taking something away that they'll never get back?
I mean, it's kind of that selective humanity that I've read so much about, and with, like, you know, Nazis.
Yeah,
in that type, it's like they're like I've heard Nazis were some of the nicest people if you were the people that they were nice to.
Yeah,
and then they go to work and do terrible things, and then they can leave it at work and come home.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of that. Yeah, I mean, and you know, like right now, I'm using the word humanity to mean like totally good and great things, but that's obviously not on the record. Humans aren't that great. Yeah, I guess it's maybe that tribe thing. They're not seeing immigrants, or in the case of the torturers, you know, whoever.
Detainees.
Yeah, the people they're torturing as part of their group, their tribe, their party, their...
or even a group deserving of, like, basic humanity.
You know, because there's all those... like,
and that's,
go ahead.
I was going to say, that's kind of the stretch there. I mean, there's... Everybody kind of has that in-crowd, out-crowd, but, you know, normal people don't treat their out-crowd with, like, as though they're inhuman or animals.
Yeah.
That's what makes it terrible.
I feel like there could be someone listening to this podcast right now that's like, yeah, but...
And that's the moral equivalency, yeah.
Well, not even... I mean, just, like, there was a video going around the internet within the past few days of... like this old lady in traffic yelling at a guy who
she didn't know this, but was like retired special forces or something, or maybe even active duty. But active duty military, and he was like an Asian dude. And she's just like opening her car window to belittle him because the story goes he was going kind of slow on the highway.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I saw that video too, and it looks like it was slow traffic. She was just like, I don't know why people are so, but that's, it's like speaks to an anger and impatience mm-hmm. and like just an abstraction that we're all kind of suffering from. And that the outgroups are even less human because of that abstraction and lack of sensitivity.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's, maybe she would have not used racist language, but yelled just as meanly at a white person doing the same thing, but maybe not, too. I don't know.
Maybe not. Yeah, it's tough to say. Is she always an asshole, or was she just an especially racist asshole? Because, yeah, she did the whole, like, trying to slant her eyes.
Yeah. While driving, by the way.
Driving, your car was in
fucking
motion.
Bitch.
Damn, please, I'm sorry, hands on the wheel.
I don't use the B word lightly, but she's a fucking bitch. That's the irony of complaining about someone else's driving while you're trying to do yeah. Anyway, she's terrible. We spent too much time on her, I'm sure already.
Yeah.
No, I just I don't know. That's the thing that gets, as terrible as what's happening to the kids. It seems like it reminds me of torture, just too much war in general on a populace, or from a populace,
mm-hmm.
It's not just the people who get shot at that, who get killed and raped and tortured that are
suffer.
Yeah. It's like the people doing it too. There's something, it's not as obvious, but there's something wrong there. And maybe this is
a societal result of it.
Yeah. This is, a rot in the society that maybe if all the things that have like led to Trump's, people always say that like, oh, this led to Trump. Oh, that's the reason for Trump. Maybe it's just something that you can't quite grasp that it's just been.
Yeah, it's just a confluence of everything.
And it's just making people, like those shirts, like one of the worst things from the 2016 election were the shirts, that some of his followers, it's like, what, fuck your feelings or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who?
Like, it's people are upset for reasons. They're not just feeling upset because they hate you.
Well, and I wonder, like, are those the people wearing fuck your feelings shirts?
Well,
are they someone who's just totally individualistic? Which then it's kind of, I guess to each their own. But, or is it someone who is, like, a great father and family member and friend and coworker? You know what I mean? Like, but they still wear that and direct that hate at someone out there.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure those people exist, right? Because nobody considers themselves bad people. And if they have family, then their family probably doesn't think they're bad people.
Yeah. Well, some of them. Yeah. Sometimes they do, but.
But, I mean.
I agree.
Those fuck your feelings shirts were really a. Not even aimed at the left, but were aimed at the right. Like, because that was, like, just, like, writing off, like, all of the liberal outrage and outraged reaction that they were eliciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, just invalidating that from the start, then you don't have to listen to anything that the quote-unquote liberals are saying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a. Yeah, it's like we're part of, like, some, like, one of those experiments where they, like, take two groups of kids or adults, totally similar or randomly, then divide them and say, you're the green team, you're the blue team, or something like that. And then, like, within a week there, or a day, or an hour, or whatever, if you just tell them that, they start, like, are willing to, like, torture and kill each other.
Yeah.
It seems like, on, like, a worldwide planetary scale, or at least a nationwide scale, we're like part of an experiment like that. Like, someone's like, all right, we got to make everyone really feel like team oriented, but it has to be something we can do on an almost nationwide level. And they're like, okay, how about one team will be the donkeys, one will be the elephants, and
and then we'll have, like, well, I guess 9/11, because it's just a convenient tool for that.
Well, you know, the thing about 9/11 is that that's kind of like a... I think the neocons at the time viewed 9/11 as actually not so much a part... And I'm not trying to get into the they caused it, but they definitely were prepared to use it.
They exploited it.
Yeah, exploit. That's a good word for it. But that's a little bit like Watchmen, Ozymandias, spoiler alert for the end of Watchmen, where he, like, is trying to bring the giant thing that destroys New York to make the world get together.
Right.
An alien attack destroys millions, it kills millions of people, and we all have to... It'll bring the whole world together. It's like this sick utopian vision. And I think that's how neocons... Like, if you would have asked someone in... Like a neocon thinker in the 90s, like, okay, let's say we have this big attack on America and we're going to go to war afterwards. What do you think they'll look like? Oh, everyone will, you know, band together like World War II, like the good old days.
Especially if we amplify it and make sure everybody is good and afraid.
Yeah.
Except we never stopped that steady drip of fear and now it's like toxic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it worked for like 3 months or however long it was. I guess he coasted into re-election a couple of years later, but I mean, his super high approval ratings faded away.
Like, yeah, pretty quickly, especially after Iraq.
Yeah, especially after it went too far, like clearly way too far. And the lies were exposed. And
now we've gone even further, and what does that say about us?
Yeah, yeah, doesn't say anything good. Ah, yep.
All right.
It's our most depressing segment. Was there anything else you wanted to say about this?
I mean, I don't know more there is to say.
Yeah, I think we covered a lot of it.
I will say what's especially troubling is that these children from especially Central America might not even necessarily speak Spanish. And so they are being warehoused in like these giant facilities where they are entirely alone in a group of people.
Why wouldn't they speak Spanish?
Because a lot of, like, people, indigenous people in Central America still speak their indigenous languages, like variations of Maya and Aztec.
Oh. Is that, I don't really know about contemporary indigenous problems in Latin America. Is that, are they, like, targeted by governments down there or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the times the, like, Beta Carceres... The activist who was assassinated, actually, she might have been actually Nicaraguan, she was from Honduras, yeah, but yeah, she was an indigenous, like, she was specifically blocking, like, the building of a hydroelectric dam on, you know, indigenous land, or what's supposed to be indigenous land, so yeah, they are kind of specifically targeted for their opposition to, development.
And so... Yeah, so it would be pretty likely that people from those communities would just at some point give up trying to be there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and then, you know, how many people working for, you know, these companies that HHS was looking into, or even in the Border Patrol.
Are prepared for that.
Yeah. I mean, there are probably adults coming that don't even... I don't know. How many adults there wouldn't speak
Spanish? At least some measure of them.
Yeah.
At least 10%.
Wow. Wild. Wild and terrible. All right. Well, we'll be back with, no good news. No good news.
No good news.
There's no such thing as that anymore. Turn on your fucking local news for one happy segment a week. All right, and we are back with some closing thoughts. Had my couple shots of whiskey after that last segment, as I hope the listeners have as well. So what should we talk about first? What did you just say about Papua New Guinea?
Papua New Guinea is banning Facebook for a month.
For a month?
Yeah, because they've had, well, to try to tamp down on fake news, it's been leading to riots and other violence. Like, you know, somebody spreads rumors over Snapchat, and then one village goes and burns down the other village kind of thing.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
It's like if you had some high schoolers, like, spreading rumors, and the parents or the school instituted, like, all right, no phones for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like that, but on a deadly national scale.
Yeah, this is just the most recent example of this. Like, they did this I think they may have actually shut down the internet in northern Sri Lanka for at least a week after some ethnic sectarian violence that resulted from terrible Facebook rumors.
Well, and now...
Then the Rohingya massacre, which we've covered in depth before, that was spread over Facebook.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg wants you to know that he is aware and can't sleep at night because of this problem.
Yeah, I don't believe you, Mark.
He thinks just saying that will make the problems go away.
And that was kind of the problem with, like, the grilling that he endured in Congress and to a lesser extent in front of the European Parliament, where they never really addressed the political issues. They were talking about the fact that it's a terrible monopoly and how Facebook is too large and how it's uncontrollable and they can't even begin to think of how to regulate it. But there's some real political issues like that lead to sectarian violence that just get glossed over because I guess nobody is burning down anybody's house in America or Europe because of something they read on Facebook.
Yet. That's a total yet.
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't have said that out loud.
Based off our last conversation even a little bit. This kind of actually comes back a little bit to what we were talking about with Erdogan and, like, dictatorial control, where I was listening to an interview with Zuckerberg, and he was talking about, I don't think it was, it might have been one of the ones you mentioned, I can't remember, but there's some sort of fake news being spread somewhere in, like, Southern Asia, and he said, like, they have, like, 10,000 or some so employees in this security department there at Facebook that look for stuff like that, and they try and stop it. But what I found interesting is when he's recounting this tale and he's trying to, like, awe the interviewer with how many people he has working on this, it still involved a call to him late at night to ask what they should do about it.
What? They don't have... And the fact that they don't have procedures.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but... I don't know if he, you know, if that was a lie to make him seem like he, you know, he's involved personally in this. But what it comes off to me is that he's just one guy who obviously has many other concerns running this giant company.
Sure.
That's a full-time job, I would think. That's a full-time job for maybe 10,000 people.
Yeah, probably even more, considering, like, how many hundreds of languages do people use to communicate on Facebook.
Exactly. I mean, how many people are monitoring, you know, what do they speak in northern Sri Lanka? Tamil or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many people working in California for Facebook know that language? And how can, like... So they either have algorithms kind of looking for things and or real people reading these things, but...
That's just a reaction to a problem, because people just change their, you know, change how they speak, which is already happening because of SEO and other problems with Google and this big data problem.
And then you call up the owner of the company late at night, say, oh, should we take off this... We think this thing might cause a riot.
Certain gentleman in northern Sri Lanka is talking about burning down his neighbor's house. Should we leave this up?
So, and what if he says no, and it does lead to death? What if he said, you know, leaves it up?
It almost certainly has, right? Had to have.
And I don't know about, you know, and how do they even know what is fake news there? Like, who at Facebook knows what is true or not on the ground in Papua New Guinea?
Yeah, which is kind of like a whole other censorship question, which, again, wasn't really addressed in any of this.
Yeah, so Group A created fake news as a pretext to attack Group B, and then a few months later, Group B is like, has a meme going around talking about what a bunch of assholes Group A people are. Well, that's true. Do you take it off? It might lead to violence, but it's true.
Well, what if, even worse, like, the analyst that Facebook is depending on to tell them what to think is like, I'm in favor of Group A.
Yeah. They're ethnically Group A, and this is, like, what you need governments for. This is what governments do. Right? This is not what private companies started by fucking horny Harvard students are supposed to be doing.
Right? Some guy who used it as a tool to, like, check out hot girls at his university.
It's just, it's gross. I mean, hey, and kudos to him that it grew so big that it needs to be a governmental problem. Like,
I mean, his acquisitions over everything didn't help.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of reasons not to give him kudos. I just mean, sort of generically speaking, fine. As a businessman, he created a big business that he will profit from no matter what. It could be nationalized tomorrow. He still already made how much money from it?
Right, and we would have to buy out his stock unless we were just completely assholes about it, which would enrich him further.
That's pretty big news out of Papua New Guinea, though. Banning it for a month. We should do that. Just ban it in America for a month. Just see what happens.
I mean, part of the reason Zuckerberg, well, maybe not, I won't impugn his character or morals to say that he married her because she's Chinese, but he has always been heavily lobbying the Chinese government to allow Facebook in China. But they've already got so much competition, I think it's a losing battle for him and a waste of his time. He should be more focused on the problems that are already in his network that are causing people to literally lose their lives. Yeah. That guy has maybe not the best priorities, even for his company. Like, the fact that he wasn't ahead of that Cambridge Analytica thing tells me that he's kind of a bad executive.
Yeah, I'd agree. Well, they knew about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't address it.
I mean, what do you do? Do you make that public and ruin your reputation? And do you wait until somebody else makes it public and the damage is worse?
No, that's pretty much the tough decisions that CEOs that make millions and billions of dollars have to deal with. Like, I don't feel too sad for them. Yeah.
He sat on his hands when he probably shouldn't have. He should have gotten out ahead of this and brought it all out as quickly as possible so that people didn't find out on their own. And he could have maybe framed their conclusions a little bit better for Facebook, but that's just my two cents as a business analyst.
Facebook is really bad at getting out ahead of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not their strength. They're good at double talking their way out of things is more what they specialize in.
And checks.
Well, yeah.
All right. Other news. What should we talk about next? The Axios article or Israel?
Yeah. No, let's do this Axios thing. It's about as lighthearted as this is going to get.
So, yeah, there was a Federal Reserve conference in Dallas this weekend, and according to Axios, a bunch of the CEOs there were, shall we say, dismissive of any broad wage increases for their workers. Let me pull up the article, sorry.
Yeah, no. And I thought the Coca-Cola one was interesting. He's like, Coca-Cola plans on hiring a bunch of new employees, and then we will get rid of a bunch of employees. And I think his idea is that we're going to hire a bunch of more technically minded, push towards automation. I mean,
I don't know if people on this listening to this podcast subscribe to the Shitty Robots subreddit, but I, for one, do not fear the future.
No?
Because, no, these making it more complicated isn't going to require fewer people. If sure. anything, it's going to require more specialized technicians and then more specialized people to help them become better specialized. And yeah, if this workforce, the incentives were structured properly, we wouldn't have an employment problem because of automation and robots. Robots should just be helping us do more.
But it will hurt existing sectors of labor.
Yeah, almost certainly.
It will do that if it's not implemented with those people in mind, with their well-being in mind. You know, in the industrial age, I mean, how many, you know, the governments didn't give a shit about people. As bad as we think our government is when it comes to labor and people and social welfare.
They really didn't care before.
A lot worse in the 19th century. And, you know, they didn't care about, you know, artisan sectors of, you know, craftsmen and, you know, fabric makers and whatever people did back then. Mm-hmm. But that just wasn't, when they were making these machines, no one, you know, I don't want to speak too broadly, maybe someone somewhere did, but in general, you didn't have big programs to, like, retrain people because they cared about the livelihoods of the people who were doing this work before the factory came in.
I don't know. Henry Ford didn't supplement any training programs for all those blacksmiths he put out of work.
Or carriage drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, anyway, so who talk to AT&T CEO or CFO?
The CFO of AT&T. I don't need that many guys to install coaxial cables. Well, maybe if you were installing the new technology, your business would be stronger and you would have more need for workers.
Now, is some of this, it doesn't bring this up in this little Axios blurb, but which is what I'm calling an article by Axios, a blurb, because they're very short. It seems to have an undercurrent of, hey, these companies have had a windfall in profits because of the tax scam, but they're not. That's not turning into better or more jobs.
No. Because, well, I mean, there's the problem is that there's always a mathematical argument for it's in the investor's best interest to return the money to them. Like, because if the government just suddenly hands you like $2 extra billion, it's very easy to demonstrate how it's in the shareholders' interest to pay off the shareholders, like with stock buybacks and dividends and everything else. But it's
On an individual level, too, if I was John T. Richie Rich and I owned 1 million shares of AT&T and they just made how much more money because of one little, one big government bill, I would want, I mean, on an individual level, I can't blame them. That's the system that they're operating in, and why
should... Sure. But the company could have used that $2 billion to expand, for instance, their infrastructure or market access or, you know, their employee loyalty.
But I want a yacht now.
Right, which, you know, in 2 years could lead to significantly stronger incomes and, you know, institutional growth in the company that they're notionally stakeholders in.
Yeah, but, you know, the CEO, I think he's kind of a dipshit anyway, so it all might backfire. I'll just take the money now, thank you.
And that's part of the... Well, I mean, I won't say it's a problem with capitalism, but it's kind of the problem with capital.
It's... Yeah, I mean, and if... No, yeah, it's... I think it's a problem with capitalism and capital and just the way the corporations are... organized.
Mm-hmm. They've forgotten their social function, so...
Did these CEOs know they were being quoted?
I mean, they can't assume that they have to assume it wasn't public. I had to have been other media in the room.
So, yeah. I mean, they're quoted by name, but this is when they're giving talks, right? This isn't like an interview.
Yeah. I mean, these are public conferences. It's like a speaking panel with like a group of other related and knowledgeable and interested people who are in the audience.
I think they just
suck it all up.
It's kind of just that they don't think anyone will do shit about it.
Yeah, they don't think that anyone will oppose them or, yeah.
Please, I'm not going to get hauled in front of the Senate before this.
No. Why? To
I gave him 500 grand last election.
Or more.
Okay. All right. Back to one of our...
favorite topics. Or,
the mustache. Yeah. The mustache rides again. So what's he up to this week? Or what? It's actually next week, right?
No, it's today.
Oh, it was today. Okay.
Yeah, he's meeting the U.S. National Security Advisor, John Bolton, will reportedly meet with his Israeli counterpart, Meir Ben-Shabbat. I'm sorry if I'm butchering that name, in Washington today to discuss a joint approach to Iran. Sources said the two security advisors will make changes to the agreement that will reflect, quote, the new reality, unquote, of the U.S. no longer being party of the 2015 nuclear agreement, the JCPOA, with Iran.
What kind of agreement do we have between Israel about Iran? This sounds a lot like a defense treaty.
Yeah, or certainly the, maybe not the trappings of a formal treaty, but certainly the... Shall we say the operation of one? Like, everybody seems to have agreed that Iran is apparently a threat, and they are going to oppose them with every weapon that in their arsenal.
Like, by law, if Iran... Well, wait, didn't Iran shoot missiles across the border into Israel within the past month or two?
Yes, they sent over some... rockets out of a multiple launch rocket system. It's a short to medium range weapon.
Okay.
And it apparently hit in the Israeli Golan Heights for minimal damage or effect.
Well, what I was going to ask is if Iran shot a bunch of missiles at Israel to the point where Israel's like, all right, it's go time. Do we, by law, have to defend Israel? Are we in that kind of relationship with them?
I think so. I know we're required to make sure that they have a qualitative military advantage over the rest of the Middle East, which is why, you know, we fund the Iron Dome system and give them, what, $3.8 billion a year? Or, well, $3.8 billion in the latest U.S.-Israel military assistance program.
Wow.
I think it's $3.8 billion a year for 10 years is what they agreed to, if memory serves.
That's okay.
So we have to care because we're giving them so much money. And even if politically we didn't agree with what they did, we'd face political repercussions because we are paying for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to meet, and I imagine John Bolton is going to tell his counterpart that they need to open up to Saudi Arabia and the rest of the Persian Gulf, the rest of the anti-Iran coalition, if you will.
Yeah.
And move forward with their program. It's May now, so campaign season in the Middle East has already started, and that should go for the next few months. So this is going to be the window of when they're going to attack, if they're going to.
Should we be keeping an eye on deployments from, I don't know, U.S. or even other countries or, I don't know, fleets on the move or something?
I usually keep track of that. We probably won't know. They would, I don't know.
We might not. If we are finding out, that means Iran knows.
Yeah, if we find out, that means bombs are already falling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Israel's new military doctrine is to fly their stealthy F-35s in ahead of the main strike force.
Does America have enough capacity in the region to engage militarily with Iran in any way? Not necessarily like a Marine Corps on the ground, but...
Sure, the Air Force. We could probably knock out all their air defenses.
Where is this Air Force? Do we have... In Iraq, or...?
We have air bases in Iraq, Kuwait, Bahrain. Okay. The 5th Fleet is headquartered in Doha, Qatar, so there will probably be a naval air station there.
Wow, okay, yeah.
And there's almost always at least one aircraft carrier somewhere nearby within operational range. So that's another, two squadrons of attack jets?
This might be a little, maybe I'm, my geography is a little off, but Iran's pretty big.
Yeah.
Can they reach Tehran from those places?
Yeah, certainly. Israel could reach almost all of Iran if they can get overflight and refueling.
Wow.
Which is kind of the reason everybody wants the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia involved and their military, because they recently received 3 KC-5 air refueling tankers. So that they could provide overflight for Israeli jets going to Iran and provide that refueling capacity, which would, allow them to make a round trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the situation is getting more dangerous instead of less dangerous.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to put anything in John Bolton's hands, it's almost certainly doomed to failure, because that guy just seems incredibly incompetent.
It's like a 3-year-old or like a little boy, will turn everything into a gun. Mm-hmm. When I was a little kid, you hand me any sort of anything, I'd be like, start pretending I'm a G.I. Joe or something. It's going to turn any government agency or power or, personnel into a war-making capacity.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't have a job if not for his opinion on war, so that's why they keep him around.
Yep, his ability to turn everyday objects into a way to shoot at Iran.
Oh, you're saying we can fight the rest of the world. Tell me more. Speak, mustache.
We could probably wrap up here. I did just get an alert on my phone for some reason. No idea why I'm getting this, but phones, they work in weird ways. They know I'm doing a podcast or something right now.
Holy cow, Roseanne was canceled.
Oh, you got it too? Yeah.
I clicked on the headlines. It's like, what is he talking about? Oh, wow.
ABC cancels Roseanne final. I've never even seen the new Roseanne. I think maybe earlier today I clicked on a tweet about her or something. Like, I don't even read about her. I'm very not interested in...
Yeah, she's not a cultural figure.
It's just, I loved the show back in the day, but I'm not interested in this garbage. ABC cancels Roseanne following Roseanne Barr's racially charged tweet.
Holy cow.
So... Amazon will pick it up, or...
Oh, no way, right?
Not Amazon.
Breitbart?
Steve Bannon's like, oh, if only I had my Hollywood connections. Mnuchin has connections. He could probably... Maybe it'll be an official White House show.
Oh, right. We'll finally pick it up as a state show. State-sponsored propaganda.
Oh, shit, nice. Man. That's, like, way too close to probably actually going to happen.
Yeah, we shouldn't have said this out loud again.
Okay, we'll take credit on that one. We'll take blame on that one. Yeah, I would, because it's been a huge ratings. It's been a huge ratings hit. It's been the biggest show in America, but it has been successful since it came back, right? I've heard.
Yeah, I've seen a few episodes of it. It was very political at first, and it got a little bit less political as it went on. Of course,
that's what I heard. Yeah.
So,
but So
I've never been a fan of the show and still am not.
No. I liked it back in the day. It was just was well acted.
Oh, back in the day, my mom wouldn't even let me watch it.
I'm sure we weren't when it was first on, but once it kind of got into reruns and maybe the later seasons, I think my sister and I exerted control over TV a little more. Yeah, I don't know. So, okay. Yeah, it'll be on the air somewhere. Unless there's some sort of, like, contract here where, like, ABC is like, yeah, but we're stopping production, but we also own the rights, and you can't take this show elsewhere. I don't know how that goes. A lot of shows you see get picked up elsewhere, but...
This might have been... Yeah, this might have become a political firestorm for her and everybody involved with the show. It's kind of like gave all their careers a shot in the arm, but have been pure poison.
What a shitty boss she is. To put people's jobs, careers... Like, who knows? Maybe some of these people stop doing other things. Like, John Goodman's been getting work, by the way, the past, you know, whatever, ever since he stopped being on Roseanne the first time.
He did Alpha House.
He's a regular working actor. And so he's all of a sudden, he comes back to do this show. Who knows what else he gave up? He could have been in the next year's Best Picture at the Oscars. Instead, he was doing the show, and now she's putting... And he's probably I'm not going to shed a tear for John Goodman's career. But, you know, there's gaffers and cameramen, and, you know, now they're out of work.
Mm-hmm. Everybody is associated with the production of that show because of her and her inability to just not be racist on Twitter, I guess.
Yeah, especially if you then have this show as a way to, maybe not quite as bluntly, but, you know, speak her mind. Like, you can't just stay off Twitter, lady?
Part of the reason she's popular is because she's kind of that personality, and it's always been a source of her career strength.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right.
This is just inevitable.
All right, I think that... might do it. You can email the podcast at tmwttpod@gmail.com. Let us know if you're putting us on any podcast search engines or if you would like to be a guest on the show. You can find me on Twitter at @BloatedNemesis, where you can find me pointing out terrible articles by local news outlets and then researching their ownership and their political donations of their ownership.
And, should have done a segment on Channel 3.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it out there for a while. But yeah, she gave money to Paul Ryan, so... And wait till the governor's race heats up a little more and I have a few more articles of them being biased. You can follow Charles on Twitter at @green_WYRD. What's been your Twitter activity lately?
The past weekend, unfortunately, I was kind of subsumed into holiday activities and that child case, but I typically do things that I find interesting, like military, political news, economic stuff. Brexit, of course, is the that looming issue, which is going to keep coming up every week or so until 2020.
Is that when they have to finish it by or something? Or?
Yeah, that's the deadline.
Huh.
So that's when either Europe and Britain will crash out of their relationship or they will, you know, there will be a stage-managed transition.
What would it be? We're getting into another topic, but that's okay. We're here. What would that look like if they...
Crashed out?
Yeah. Like, you can kind of, I can sort of picture in my head... Broadly speaking, not that I know the details, a sort of gradual, this department, that department, these people, slow.
Yeah, we'll take up our customs.
But what would it happen if it just was like, overnight, just sever, we didn't get through all of what we needed to get through, but it's happening anyway?
For one thing, Britain would basically be cut off from the rest of the world from air traffic. Because currently their air traffic is managed under the European Commission and European Union. And so they rely on those treaties for their open skies access to, like, Russia, America, everywhere else.
It's seems like so, and then you could sort of extrapolate that to so many different sectors.
If all of a sudden there were border posts and customs duties, which, you know, if there is a crash out, those customs and borders procedures are just going to be in utter chaos, so who knows if they're going to even be able to let people into England or in the UK. I mean, right now the big issue is they're trying to avoid a hard border in between Ireland and Northern Ireland, and that could be a very real possibility.
Seems like I need to watch Children of Men soon. A lot like that. Children of Men, where they have this police state. Britain's a police state. Alright, well, that's been Tell Me What to Think. Thank you all for listening. And, you know, watch out for those buckling roads.
Everywhere. From North Dakota all the way to Iowa, to Minnesota, and here in Wisconsin.
Drive safe, everyone. Especially while you're listening to the podcast. I don't want to be a part of that.
We have no liability if you get in trouble.
Watch out! Oh.
Days of sunny, days of rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!